Portland, 91.9 FM Hood River in the Gorge, 104.3 FM Philomath and Corvallis. Today's speaker was Imam Sheikh Muhammad Najib. His topic today was accepting divine guidance. We want to invite you to tune in to Islamic Point of View every Sunday morning, inshallah, from 8 a.m. to 8:30 a.m. Inshallah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh. We also want to invite you to stay tuned for Tom Park and Pathways.
This KABU program is made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from the Divination Foundation, offering the enlightened decision-making system to help people and organizations make the right moves at the right time. More information at www.divination.com. That's divination.com.
Yes, I am, too.
Good morning and welcome to Pathways. This is Tom Park, your host today. Folks, I have a repeat visitor today. And some of you may recall, back in 2008, my guest, John Elder Robison, was here with his book called Look Me in the Eye. Now, John's forte, his fame, is that he is an Asperger's patient. He is definitely diagnosed and has a life full of experiences to ground him in that. But he has transcended, folks. He has created a very productive and successful life. And he will tell you straight up, he really is an Asperger's person. So today we have John back here on the occasion of his new book. Like I said, the first time he was here, it was Look Me in the Eye, his first book. This book is called Be Different. Great title, John.
Well, thank you.
Great title.
For having me on with you today.
Be Different, Adventures of a Free-Range Aspergian.
Yep, that's it.
Right. Folks, he created the word Aspergian. I love that. He coined that word, and he's entitled to do that. This is his world. So, also he says, with practical advice for Aspergians, misfits, families, and teachers. John, so today, I don't really have much of a chart about where to go, but you've had a lot of life experience. You have a lot of heart, I can tell, to help and to lend guidance to people that are coping with these issues, maybe with their children, maybe with themselves, maybe with their spouse, maybe with somebody they teach or they interact with professionally. You have lots of advice, and boy, I don't care how you take it. You can tell us a couple stories and reach our hearts that way. Whatever you like, I'd like you to have at my audience and give us some message today about the new book and what you're up to.
Well, as you said, I was here a few years ago when I wrote Look Me in the Eye about growing up and being different. When I wrote that book, I talked about how I was sort of isolated and alone as a kid, and of course that's the nature of disability. If you can't make friends, you can't pass school, and that's what happened to me. I failed school in the 10th grade, but I left home and I joined rock and roll band and I became successful. Ultimately, I wrote that book about growing up. And in it, I talked about Asperger's and how I was different. And I talked about learning about Asperger's when I was 40 years old, because people like me didn't get diagnosed when we grew up in the 50s and 60s. The Asperger diagnosis didn't enter the DSM manual psychiatrists use until the mid-90s.
So you're way down the road in your life before people are even recognizing and harmonizing with what you're dealing with.
Well, I knew that I was different. I always had this feeling that I was like a fraud or I was defective or something. I always felt bad about myself, but I didn't know exactly why I was different from other people. So when I learned about Asperger's, it was really tremendously liberating, because I was able to, for the first time, see why it was that I was different from other people. And what that meant. And for me to realize that I was not defective, I was just a guy with this Asperger thing, and there were millions of other people like me, That was huge. The other thing that was huge, though, was when I read about how Asperger people differ from other folks, how we do things other people don't expect and how we don't do things that people expect. For the first time in my life, I understood the reasons for so many of my social failures. And I was able to resolve that I was going to teach myself to act differently. And that totally transformed my life. It was just amazing.
John, now, this is a bit of recollection. I was with you for 1 hour, 2.5 years ago. You seem more at ease now even than when I saw you last time. Is that possible?
It absolutely is. And what you see in me, or what you hear in me, those of you who are listening to me on the radio now, you can listen to audio of me that was recorded 3 and 4 years ago. And there's a greater range of expression in my voice. There's a greater degree of animation right now. Yep. And what that shows you is the ongoing power that we have to change our brains. I've come out in the world and I've engaged people more. And as a result, I have indeed developed. So that shows that the idea that you can't teach old dogs new tricks is, in the case of people like us, not true. And for somebody who has a child who's different and they wonder, well, will my kid ever learn to fit in? He's 18 or he's 21. You can just listen to me. Look at the change in me from being 49 to 53. And it's a magical transformation. And when you imagine then that your kid is half my age, well, of course he's got the potential to do that.
Very good. Okay, folks, you know, we oftentimes, and usually, we associate these things with disability, all right? Asperger's, et cetera, autism. But the other side of the coin is this group of people, they seem to be gifted more often than not. They are gifted with all sorts of special concentration abilities and talents. I mean, okay, here's something John said to me before we started tape. Well, here we are in the Northwest. Places like businesses like Microsoft and Hewlett-Packard, they're crammed with people, these special people who have these abilities, have this focus. Maybe they seem geeks to the outside world, right? Everybody calls them geeks. But the fact is, so many of these people have superiority, that they can do things that normal folks really can't do.
Well, I think that that's true. I think that you have this continuum in the autism spectrum. And at one end of the continuum, you have people who are geeky eccentrics who are very functional. And a lot of those people have jobs in technology companies, at universities. Some of them are anesthesiologists, radiologists. Some of them are attorneys. But as you move deeper into autism and you have more of these autistic traits, the disability starts to outweigh the gift.
All right.
And the more autistic you are, the more disabled you can be. So certainly to look at a person like that and say, that's how it is for every autistic person, that would be a false picture.
Thank you. Very good. Okay. So, John, also you said before we started, the numbers are a bit overwhelming. So how many people are touched in their lives by autistic or Aspergian people?
Well, the number of people with what you might call profound autistic disability is a fraction of 1% of the population. If we look at the number of people who are, let's say, geeky eccentrics, and that would include children who have a strong potential to emerge from disability. You see, we're always going to be different, but we're not always going to be disabled. And as we learn adaptive strategies, we cease to be disabled.
John, we're always going to be different. Say it again.
We're always going to be different, but we're not always going to be disabled.
Wow, that's on the mark.
We learn, in the case of a kid today, we learn that a child has autism or Asperger's because he fails socially or academically, usually in school. And indeed, that's what disability is. You're failing at something. But if you teach yourself coping strategies and how to work around the disabling aspects of your difference, you aren't disabled anymore. And that's the goal for every person like me. And the further goal is to take the ways in which a person like me sees the world and recognize that if the other 99% of the population can solve most problems better and faster than me. There will be that one problem they can't solve at all. And because I'm different, I can see the solution to it. And if I can put myself in a position where I solve those kinds of problems, I'm going to be very valuable,
very valuable
to the rest of society. And there's a basis for a mutual support. You know, we need each other. And so that's how one emerges from disability to become exceptional, by being able to do things others can't. And because I do things others can't, that tends to overshadow the fact that those other people can maybe do ordinary things better than me most of the time.
Hot
because
dog.
They take those things for granted.
Hot dog. So, John, the folks listening today, maybe they have some children. They might say, because this really is, this wrenches someone's heart. They have a child that's limited, okay? But explain how they might be able to find some facet of that child that's really the lifesaver, that's really the exit out of the hardship. Tell
well,
me about
the exit out is just like when I was 13 years old. When I was younger than 13, I was basically a loser. I didn't have friends. I was not doing well in school. I was not on a path to success. At that age, I became interested in electronics. And being different, I was able to spend more time studying electronics than most people. You see, I described in Look Me in the Eye my social isolation as a result of Asperger's. And you hear that, and you think, well, it's purely a disability. But the other side of that is, because I didn't have a social life, I didn't have any distractions to stop me from studying what I was interested in. And my guess is that because of that, I was able to spend more time studying electronics between the ages of 13 and 18 than most people spend to get a doctorate in the subject.
Wow, no kidding.
And so it's not that I was a natural-born genius at electronics. It was that I was able to concentrate and study, and I found an interest. And that's what you can do for your child. You can help your child find whatever they're interested in, and the fact that they see the world differently than other kids means that they will maybe be disadvantaged solving some problems, but they will be advantaged solving others.
That's so big, John.
It is. It's a really big deal, and every kid's going to be different. So you've got to expose your kids to the maximum range of learning opportunities so they can see what they're interested in and seize it.
That's the big part right there, isn't it?
It absolutely is, yeah. Yeah, we have to just expose the kids to a lot of different experiences, because some kids are going to have an insight into animals, and some might be interested in farming, and some might be interested in computers, and some might be able to recall every statistic of baseball history. There's just no telling. But there's a market for every one of those things in the grown-up world.
There is an application. In this complicated world, there is a market for whatever gift they have, isn't there?
That's right. And what parents have to see is that a 12-year-old who's fixated on baseball scores, who can tell you everyone's batting averages back into the 1930s, he's a freak and people laugh at you. But when you become a grown-up,
yes,
and all of a sudden you have that kind of memory, there's many, many places that's tremendously valuable. So all of a sudden you become a world-renowned expert where you were just a freak as a kid. And it shows how the very same trait that was disabling to a child is a great gift to a grown-up.
Folks, this is what I hope to communicate to everybody today on today's show, is this reality. Here's a man who's realized it in his life, okay? But if you have folks, maybe it's not your child, maybe a brother, a cousin, maybe somebody in the neighborhood, they have a real out. They have a real, they even have an advantage, really. John, yes?
I think that there are many situations where I am at a disadvantage, but the times when I have an advantage tend to be times when most other people can't see the solution. So when I see the solution, they place a disproportionate value on it, and that kind of saves me in the situations where I don't do so well.
Very good. Okay, folks, here's another shocker. John was explaining this to me before we started recording. This, although we have people diagnosed and we have all this emphasis in our education now, our system, about the autistic kids and the special needs kids, it's just a gradient. It's just a line of shadow between those kids that are diagnosed and considered really in a disabled category. It's just a gradual line of shadow into the normal population. It's not a black and white line. There's like a, tell me about this, John.
Well, I think that I was disabled as a kid because I was a failure socially. There are many kids who have Asperger or autism traits who are socially weak, but they aren't weak to the point of disability. They pass school, they make a few friends, and so those people don't have any kind of disability diagnosis, and they may grow up and get a job, but I would suggest to you that every one of those people could read this Be Different book, and they will see themselves in those stories. And the strategies I describe in Be Different that helped me become successful, I think are applicable and relevant to millions of geeky and different people, diagnosis or otherwise.
How many people listening today have felt like, gosh, I really am different?
It's
a big
number. Sure, it's got to be a quarter of your listeners. If the people in my audiences are any indication, when I first started speaking to the public, and people would come up to me and say, well, I so identified with that story you wrote, I expected, if I was a freak, everyone who said that would be a freak like me, and they weren't. I mean, increasingly, you know, I would get these handsome guys and pretty girls coming up and saying that, and those were people that I would have thought would have been social stars when we were in school, and yet they felt the same way, and it just shows you that really everyone is different in some way.
Yep, and there's all a gradient line of distinction. It's not like there's this real clear neighborhood down there of people that are disabled and all the rest of us are in this normal. There's really a total gradient line from one extreme to the other extreme, and all in between is populated with people.
Yeah, it absolutely is, yeah.
Very good. Okay, John, so in this book, it's mostly stories?
It is. It's mostly stories, but where Look Me in the Eye was a chronological sort of autobiography, started with a kid and ended with me today. This book is arranged by, you know, really meaningful problems. Like I have stories on learning manners, stories on finding a girlfriend, on making and keeping friends, on bullies. I have stories on just all sorts of different stuff. People talk about their kids having sensory problems. They're real sensitive to clothing and light and sound. And I have a story in here called Underwear with Teeth. And the meaning of that should be pretty self-evident. So I talk about the ways in which I am touched by these autistic differences. And like I said, sometimes they're purely disabling, and I tried to minimize those things. But a lot of times, what was on one hand a disability was on the other hand a gift to me.
So, John, you're a successful man. I know you're a successful businessman. What is your specialty? Something, it's something to do with like luxury automobiles?
I have a company called Robeson Service back in New England, and we repair and restore mostly Rolls-Royce, Bentley, and Land Rover vehicles, but we also do a fair bit of service on Mercedes, BMW, Jaguar, and some Porsche cars.
Okay, but you're out there in the sticks in New England someplace?
Well, we believe you're out here in the sticks, Oregon. We don't see it that way.
But my point is there some great population of these automobiles near you, or do people seek you out and ship these cars across the countryside? It's quite a specialized thing, isn't it?
Well, it's kind of like a Field of Dreams story, really. People bring me these cars from all over. I get cars shipped into us from Texas, from Illinois. I got cars in there from Toronto now.
That's my point.
Yeah, they come from all over.
So you've specialized and developed quite a crown here. You're recognized as quite a specialist.
I think that one hallmark of people with Asperger's is we are sort of driven to know everything there is to know about our subject of interest.
And
I think that I am driven to know everything there is about these cars, and people see that in me. I just know more about the stuff that we are working on than the average service representative in a dealership. And people ship us cars from a long, long way away for big jobs.
It sounds to me what you described, that quality, sounds to me like the primary definition of genius.
Well, I mean, people define genius different ways. I don't think being driven to know everything about something is necessarily genius. And the thing about that is, this is not a condition where there are a few geniuses that are successful and everyone else is a failure. This is really that there are many, many people who simply are different, and we have to learn how to use our differences to help us be successful in the world, as opposed to letting our differences cause us to fail. And okay. Genius isn't necessarily the key to that.
It's a good time for a story or two. Please, John, take it now. Please do some brief stories, but give me one or two examples of where, just what you just said, people that have used their differences and they have become successes, they become very happy people.
Well, you can look at myself, for example. When I was 16 years old, I was interested in electronics, and I was teaching myself electronics, and I wanted to go out on my own. And at age 16, I didn't know enough, let's say, to be an engineer in a big company. They knew a lot more than me. But I knew a lot more than local musicians, and I was able to fix guitar amplifiers and modify them. So I was able to find a place where my skills were good enough to do the job. And there was a need for the job, and the musicians recognized what I could do. And that was really a path out of a bad home life for me. I was able to join a band and travel around, and I ended up working with bigger and bigger bands until I was on the road with Pink Floyd's Sound Company a few years later. And then I was traveling with Kiss, building their special effects. And really that illustrates that sort of path out of disability.
Okay, but John, come on now. You're going to tell all these parents out there, the kids should join a band and hit the road?
No, I'm not telling them that.
I'm joking.
What I would say is that that my story shows that there are a lot of pathways to success other than the traditional route of graduating from high school and going to college. And indeed, that's not for everyone. And I think the other thing that's significant about these stories of mine is that if you've got a kid in your life, any young person, and you want to sort of help show them maybe how they could find a better life, having a relatable story is a powerful tool. There's millions and millions of people that can identify with my stories of designing video games at Milton Bradley and building guitars for Kiss. If I had done something real strange, it might not be such a relatable story to so many young people today.
What's a more extreme case? Do you have some for us? Your story, we get it right away. Any story where maybe someone's gifts and abilities were pretty novel, pretty unusual?
Sure. A good example of that would be my friend Temple Grandin. Now, Temple is not a technical person. She kind of sees the world the way an animal sees it. She is able to walk around the parking lot of a building, and she could just say to you, a cow would shy away here. A cow would step back from these lines painted in the pavement. She's able to actually understand how cattle and how horses see the world. And she has revolutionized the design of animal handling facilities at processing plants all over the United States. She actually, all by herself, has probably designed the handling systems that process 3/4 of the meat in the United States, because she has this extraordinary ability to see the world from the eyes of those animals and make humane handling systems for them where the animals are comfortable. And there's nobody else in the world that can do that.
Fascinating. Okay, that's a fantastic offering. What else? Any other stories like that that are extreme?
There's another fellow with this Asperger thing, Daniel Tammet. Daniel has the ability to see numbers in his head as shapes and objects, and he's able to pile those objects atop one another and twist them and move them around.
In his imagination,
he actually, in a televised challenge, he recited pi to 21,000 decimal places.
No way.
Nobody else has ever done that before.
No kidding.
Yep. That's a lot of numbers to have in your mind.
It's impossible.
Well, it's not impossible. He did it.
Incredible, huh? Okay, great. Any last one or two little stories, and then I'm going to ask you for a website. Any other little story or two that might be helpful? How about some little girls? Anything? We had one with a lady.
Well,
the
Temple.
Animals.
Temple's a big girl. She's a few years older than me.
All right.
You just uh, you just don't know. The schools here in Portland, everywhere in the country, the schools are full of geeky kids. And the thing about this is nobody could have ever predicted that myself or Temple or Daniel, no one would have ever predicted we would have the adult abilities that we have shown when we were children. And I guess what that goes to show you is you look at these children who are struggling, and you have absolutely no idea what kind of successes they can be as adults. But if you have worry about the chances of success, you look at people like us, and you can see how we have grown up to have good lives. And okay. I think that's a powerful thing.
Very powerful. And a very key thing for people that want to help is to assist the children to discover avenues to express these abilities, these gifts.
We need to expose our kids to as much as we can so they can find their interests and find their passions. And the other thing we need to do is we need to help these kids learn to communicate and relate to other people. That is a really, really important thing too, because Asperger's and autism are, at their heart, communication disorders. We have difficulty reading the unspoken signals of other people. Sometimes we have difficulty understanding language. And we absolutely need to help kids who are different overcome those challenges to be successful.
So those are the key, the real emotional barriers to the kids
yes.
being able to blossom.
Yeah, they are, yeah.
The communication.
Yeah.
All right. So, folks, this has been a chat with John Elder Robison. The book is Be Different, Adventures of a Free-Range Aspergian. That's great, Free-Range Aspergian. Good for you, making that up. All right. And is there a website, John? Because yep. they want to know some place to be in contact. They can't be in contact through the show.
People can find me on Facebook. I'm John Elder Robison and John.Robison on Facebook. I'm at John Robison on Twitter. And they can type John Robison blog or John Robison speaking schedule right into Google, find my appearances. They can find my online writings. I'm pretty easy to find online.
Okay, Robison, folks. There's no N in that. It's not Robinson. It's Robison.
That's right.
John Elder Robison.
Yep.
Oh, thank you, brother. Thanks for coming by again.
Well, thanks for having me with you again.
All right. Hey, folks, this is Tom Park for Pathways, and of course, we'll be back next Sunday morning. We want to thank those folks that make Pathways possible. There are people in the KBOO community that support us on, and especially not only the foundation members, but divination.com, whose constant support for Pathways keeps us healthy and vital through the months and years. Thank you, divination.com. You can go over there and see what that site is like. It's a fun place. Folks, thanks a lot. We'll be back next Sunday morning, myself or Paul O'Brien. Thanks for joining us.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Divination Foundation, offering the enlightened decision-making system to help people and organizations make the right moves at the right time. More information at www.divination.com. That's divination.com.
This KBOO program has been made possible in a part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Artigiano Orphan Farm to Table Italian Fare and Made Pasta, Wine and Alfresco Dining, Alive Music, Alive Jazz on Division Street, Southeast Portland. More information, you can call at 503-860-3419 or artigianopdx.com.
Partirono le rondini dal mio paese freddo senza sole, cercando primavera di viola, nidi d'amore di felicità. La mia piccola rondine parti senza lasciarmi un bacio, senza un addio pare. tu. Non ti scordare di me, la vita mia legale a te, c'è sempre un nido al mio cor verde. Non ti scordare di me.
Avete ascoltato Mario Lanza in Non ti scordare di me, una bellissima canzone